It is 8:34 right now. 74 degrees in downtown Moberly. And joining us on the phone is Congressman Blaine Lugdemeyer. Thank you for joining us again this morning for your monthly update.
It's great to be with you again.
And we'll remind our listeners, phone number is 263-2424, 388-6424, 1-800-892-2300. If you have any questions, go ahead and give us a call right now. And generally, your thoughts on what you're seeing going on the past week and coming on the week ahead. What are some of the highlights that you have out there?
Well, I think that, you know, the unemployment numbers and job numbers came out this morning, and it looked good again. Unemployment dropped to 3.9%. There's over 150,000 jobs created in July, which a little less than anticipated, but it's still some good numbers, a lot of manufacturing jobs in that. Last week we had the growth numbers came out, which blew the top off what everybody thought it would be with a 4.1% growth rate the second quarter. So, you know, then bottom line is the rollback and stoppage of this onslaught of rules and regulations and the tax reforms that were put in place late last year are all working. It's getting our economy going, and people are seeing more money in their paychecks as their taxes go down, and more opportunities from the standpoint of other jobs out there. The numbers of for job increases, the percentage is significant. So everything for the economy looks good. I think, we'll see once where it goes over the next few months, but I just don't think there will be anything other than just up, up, up. I think, the thing that will be sort of the governor, if you would, on our growth rate will be the fact we don't have as many workers as we would need to be able to grow faster. I think you'll see us sit in a 3.5% to 4.5% range over the next several months. We don't have the workers in place to be able to grow faster than that. So I think that's good for the workers from a standpoint. There's going to be competition for the workers themselves. And those, when competition hits, that means that those jobs probably will increase in pay. So I think it's a win-win for everybody across the board. And things look good from the economic standpoint.
Any concerns that might trigger inflation, though?
Well, everybody wants to talk about inflation, but we've seen almost no increase in inflation, minimal at best at this point. Even the folks that are sounding the alarm about tariffs being concerned about inflation there, that hasn't been seen yet. The economists haven't seen it. The Fed hasn't seen it. Nobody's seen it yet. So I think some of this is happy talk from the media. Some of it's just overblown. You've got to wait till the numbers are in. And I think, the inflation itself is under control from that standpoint. And I think we'll be fine. I really see that, 4.5% growth does not mean we're going to have runaway inflation. I think it just means that we have a lot of opportunities for people and businesses to really enhance themselves and, put themselves in a position to, have a better future for themselves and their families.
Taking calls at 263-2424, 388-6424, or 1-800-892-2300. The numbers, as you say, economically look good for Main Street and Wall Street, but Treasury this week reporting they expected to borrow $750 billion more the final 6 months of this year, even more next year, to help cover an increasing deficit. How do we get that under control?
Well, I think you get it under control by controlling spending and also growing the economy, and that's what we're trying to do. We have a difficult time controlling spending when we don't have control of the Senate. It takes 60 votes to control the Senate, and neither party has 60 votes, so that means you've got to compromise. As a result, we don't get as much spending cuts as we'd like to have to be able to control the budget. But on the flip side of that, you grow the economy, and we're starting to see the numbers increase. We've got record revenues coming in. So I think in short order, those numbers will turn around. I think we're in a good place. Sometimes you have to invest, have to borrow money to invest in the future to be able to grow your business, and I think that's what we're doing.
All right, 263-2424, 388-6424, 1-800-892-2300. What's going to be happening in Congress here over the next couple months heading up into the elections? Will a lot get done between now and November, or are we just going to see posturing and people getting ready for post-election?
Well, I think there's a number of bills that are going to have to be worked on. I think you'll see another flood insurance bill is going to have to be extended. You'll see appropriations bills shortly. We passed about half of them. We got about half of them to go, and the end of September is whenever they have to be done. So I think they're looking at a couple of different packages of bills, and perhaps a CR, a continuing resolution, on part of it. I think you'll continue to see other measures, such as the tax bill that we're working on. The original tax bill that we passed back last December didn't have the taxes on individuals on a permanent basis. It was only there for 8 years. What we want to do is make that permanent. And there's some other fixes or some glitches that we had in the bill that we didn't realize at the time. But as time has gone by here, we realize that there's a couple problems that we got to fix. So we'll have a bill to do that, to make those rates permanent for individuals and small business folks, as well as fix some of the glitches we got in the bill. So those are some of the major things. I think we may have we're going to start talking about a transportation bill and some other things, but I don't know that there's going to be a lot of action taken on at this point.
Farm bill is one of those other things out there right now. Both the House and the Senate have come up with their own versions, which appear to be wildly different. How is that going to go in compromise in conference committee?
Well, the issue is the rework requirements on the food stamp program. What the House had in their version was a requirement that in order for, and there's 60% of the people who qualify for food stamps are able-bodied individuals who can work and they choose not to. The other 40% are seniors, disabled, children, individuals or single women with children or pregnant or something like that. So those folks don't have the work requirement. The people who do have work requirements are people who are between the ages of 18 and 59 who are able-bodied, able to work. And what the requirement is that you just go get training. It's not that you have to go work. It's that you have to go get training to work. So if, as we talked about a minute ago, one of the problems that we have with our economy right now is we don't have enough trained employees to be able to fill the needs of all of the different companies that are out there wanting to hire people. This is an opportunity for people to enhance their skill set, have the government pay for it, we'll continue to draw food stamps at the same time, and prepare yourself so that you can get off of food stamps, get off of welfare, and get yourself a job and get yourself out of this rut and get over the hump. And so it's an opportunity that we thought would be great to provide for folks, especially in this time when there are plenty of jobs out there. All you need is a skill set that can match up with the jobs. So that's the problem with the farm bill. Our bill has a work requirement in it. The Senate bill doesn't. And so that's really the point that's going to have to be worked on. Otherwise, the bill is pretty non-controversial. The rest of it is basically a tweaking of existing programs, and there's not much disagreement on a lot of that stuff.
Is training enough? Because getting an unemployed coal miner in West Virginia training to work on a wind farm in Kansas or work in agriculture in California is not necessary. The jobs aren't necessarily in the right places, are they?
Well, I think you go back, you're not... Number one, if you're living in West Virginia, you're not getting trained in Kansas. You're getting trained in West Virginia for whatever is available there. And I think the coal mines are being opened back up, by the way, because of the Trump administration's policies. So, but they don't have to be a coal miner. They can be a wind farm producer. They can be a truck driver. Truck drivers are, if anybody wants to drive a truck today, if you've got a CDL license, why, you can walk in and get a job. If you want to be a plumber, electrician, computer repair person, there's just tons and tons of jobs out there that take a particular skill set or a little background to be able to do that some people don't have, that we're willing to give them that opportunity to be trained so they can have that opportunity. So you may not have the exact same job that you have now. It'd be a different job. It may be, but it takes a different skill set for that job. And so the program that we're putting together is enabling people to obtain that skill set so they can go get a job, so they can feed themselves and their families hopefully get a better life for themselves and their families.
Congressman Blaine Luchtemeyer is our guest. We're taking phone calls 263-2424, 388-6424, 1-800-892-2300. We do need to take a quick break. We'll be back with more in a moment here on Information Radio Quicks.
Glasshouse Cynthia O'Loughlin is throwing stones. First at Trump, now at her opponents. Glasshouse Cindy is no outsider to Jeff City politics. She's run for office multiple times, even pays a lobbyist to bend the law to her favor. She's even been a treasurer for a special interest group, and Glasshouse Cindy doled out over $1 million to Jeff City politicians trying to influence their votes. That's about as insider as you can get. Glasshouse Cindy attacks an opponent for working with the lawyers arguing for local landowner rights, rights trampled in projects like the Grain Belt land grab that Glasshouse Cindy backs. But Glasshouse Cindy and her company hire lots of lawyers, like when she cut corners and ignored regulations, causing the death of an employee. For her negligence, 4 children were left without a father, and Glasshouse Cindy refused to make it right, instead forcing the widow to take her to court. Glasshouse Cindy is wrong for Northeast Missouri's future. Paid for by Missouri's Future, Leanna Higanoff, Treasurer.
It is 8:45. You're listening to Quicksilver this morning. Congressman Blaine Luchtenmeyer is our guest. And first segment, we talked a little bit about the economy. A bill that's gotten a lot of play on both sides of the aisle this week is Bernie Sanders' proposal, I guess, for other people have proposed it, Medicare for All, where even a libertarian group has come out and said this would save government and save the American taxpayers, not necessarily the government, taxpayers, $2 trillion over a decade. Have you had a chance to look much into the proposal? Your thoughts on it?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen that proposal. Bernie Sanders is someone who's a self-avowed socialist and believes that the money in your pocket is the government's and not yours. And he's wanting to take that and provide free health care for all, which, you know, if that's what you believe, fine. But there is no such thing as free health care. Somebody pays the bill on that, and it's going to be the balance of the taxpayers to be able to pay for something like that. So I haven't seen the program, but to me, anything he proposes normally is something that everybody else pays the bill so that he can have a great talking point with his political ideology.
If it would save American people $2 trillion over a decade, though, whether or not basically a lot of the savings come from what insurance companies, I guess, are promoting to promote themselves, marketing, things like that, isn't it something at least worth taking a look at?
Well, I certainly take a look at it, but I have a hard time believing he can put together a program that's going to save $2 trillion. That just doesn't work unless somebody is not getting paid for their services or somebody's not getting any service at all. The numbers just don't work that way. I mean, Bernie Sanders doesn't use the same calculator that everybody else does when he figures out what something costs.
All right, 263-2424, 388-6424, 1-800-892-2300. A group of Republican congressmen, including Jim Jordan, a small group, admittedly, is leading an effort to impeach Rod Rosenstein. Is that going to go anywhere in the House?
I don't know. There's a lot of concern about it. Rosenstein seems to be someone who is not willing to work with the House Intelligence Committee and release information that they need to be able to investigate certain things and do their job, which is provide oversight. You know, Congress has two basic responsibilities. One is legislative, and the other one is oversight. And the previous administration did a lot of things that needed to be reviewed and have some exposure to sunlight done to it, and we're trying to do that. And our committees need documentation to show that some certain things went on or didn't go on, and see, well, let's just find out what the truth is. And so their job is to provide that oversight, to find the truth and expose it and take action from there. So if they can't do that, they don't have the documentation, and Rosenstein is being very obstructionist in the way he's releasing information or not releasing it. So this is a pretty drastic step for them to take, but it's something that he's basically ignored their subpoenas for information, and this is the next step they're taking. So we'll see. I really don't know how far it's going to go. Rosenstein surely will not want to go down that road. I would think he'd be willing to work with this group, the Intelligence Committee, and give them the information they want and not go to that extreme, but we'll see what happens.
Does the majority of your caucus want to go down that road, or they will look for a different way to get that documentation?
Well, they will support this group if this is the only path to get it. You know, they're not, you know, we're pretty supportive of the Intelligence Committee's job and its work, and understand that it has to have its documentation. And this is not an unusual situation. This administration, some of the people that are in these deep state positions in some of these agencies are very difficult to get work to work with. I've worked with some of them myself sometimes, and They're very, very difficult to work with, and this is why the people at the top have got to start cleaning out a lot of the agencies with people like this who are obstinate to obstruct the actual job of Congress to be able to provide the oversight. So, I don't think that we're opposed to them doing this. I'm sure that they had the blessing of leadership when they did this. So, therefore, I think this is an unfortunate next step, but if it has to be taken, it has to be taken.
All right, 263-2424, 1-800-892-2300. I know we've taken up your entire time. One more topic I want to bring up before we let you go. USDA announcing late last month about $12 billion in short-term tariff relief for agriculture. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I can talk all day on trade. This is a long-term situation. I think what the president did there was two things. Number one, alleviate some of the fears for some of the folks who are being negatively impacted by some of the trade discussions that are going on. And the second thing it did, it gave him leverage in discussing things. And I think you saw the next day or next day after that, whenever he announced this program, that the European Union decided to come to the table and start talking, realizing that he meant business, number one. Number two, realizing that he had the ability to continue to put pressure on them from all different sides. And he's willing to subsidize our farmers here to take that issue off the table for the EU to be able to pound those folks with their tariffs. So he really kind of killed two birds with one stone here. He took some of the fear out of the agriculture community for some of the things that are going on, as well as give himself leverage in the negotiations with the EU. And at the end of the day, again, this is a very complicated situation. At the end of the day, whenever you work with, if you can get the EU to back off and work with us on tariffs, it puts us and them on the same page, and then you have a huge chunk of more than between 50% and 60% of the world economies are all united in this leveling of tariffs, and that puts China in a really big box. So there's a whole lot more going on here than just a subsidy program for farmers. There's a huge, big, complex issue here. Also, another reason he wants to get the EU to the table is to have them stop allowing China to either buy companies or set up companies in their countries and bring in the Chinese products through those countries, sort of in our back door. So, there's a whole lot going on here, and this is just one piece, small piece of a puzzle that gives the president the leverage that he needs to be able to negotiate. And be able to, and quite frankly, he has the leverage in this, and it will eventually turn out that he's going to win these situations, but it will take a little time to work through the issues and work through the problems. But everybody, the EU to the table, and once they're to the table and we get this resolved, pretty quickly everybody else is going to fall in line.
It was proposed as a short-term solution. What happens if the leverage doesn't extend long enough where the $12 billion will cover everything and he runs out of time and the money's gone? Do you continue funding it, or do you look for other solutions?
Well, you'll have to talk to the president about that. That's his program, his policy. But I think that there's a lot of there's a lot of solutions there. You can continue the program. You can change the program. You can add another program. It's up to him to decide what tools of the toolbox he wants to whip out and start working with. The bottom line is that he's got a lot of tools in the toolbox, and he has leverage over the EU, and they know it. And so they've come to the table and started talking. So he's in a good position, and he just has to be able to continue to push the buttons and make sure that the EU realizes that he's not going to give in. They're going to have to sit down at the table and start negotiating in good faith. And I think you saw with the NATO agreement that he came away with, he took a year and a half to get that done. But he got it done, and now the other EU countries are starting to pay their fair share, or will be shortly. And these are things, the NATO agreements and the trade stuff. He's talked about this for 25 or 30 years. This is not something he's pulled out of the air and started to do something on a whim. He's been talking about this for a long, 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 long time. And trade is a big issue from the standpoint of our economy. There's three things that the president wants to do to get our economy going: reduce rules and regulations, drop the taxes, tax reform is what we've done. So we've done those two things already. And the third thing is trade. Allow free and fair trade and put our companies on a level playing field. And when you do that, the rest of our economy will, with fewer rules and regulations and lower taxes, it enables companies to compete. And when you lower the trade barriers, It allows them to sell internationally, and suddenly our country is in a good position economically and his economy off and running for a long, long time, many, many years to come. So he's trying to reset the trade policies of the world and quit allowing the world, rest of the world to take advantage of our good nature, quite frankly. They were all bullies on the playground, and he's pushing back. He said, it's time to push back against them, and we're going to do that. And so when you're in the middle of a fight with a bully on the playground, you can't just say, boo, expect them to run away. That's not going to happen. You're going to fight him. And he's in the middle of a fight right now with both China and the EU. EU has come to the table, and China, I think, will be shortly because their economy is weak and it's struggling, and he knows it, and they know it. And, you know, they've got a 300, and I saw a newspaper article this last week, $376 billion difference between what we import and what we export to China. If he decides tomorrow to stop importing anything from China, and they have a half a trillion dollars worth of stuff sitting there on the ports, filling up their warehouses, that's huge leverage. And so even with their economy weakening, they're trying to devalue their dollar right now to try and catch up. They've got very big problems, and he knows it. And so as long as he keeps the pressure on them, I think at the end of the day, we'll come out of there with a good deal as well.
All right. Before I let you go, anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
No, I think we have general elections, our primary elections next week, Tuesday. Hope everybody goes out and votes. It's going to be a great fall. You know, hopefully we'll get the trade stuff settled shortly, and everybody will have a good fall and good winter to be able to plan for next spring.
Congressman Blaine Lichtenmeyer has been our guest. Thank you for your time today, sir.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
You too. We'll be back with more in a moment here on Quicks.